Hi there, my name is Catherine. I work as the Director of Development with the Second Cup. And in light of all of the changes that we're seeing within our communities the last few months, we thought it was really important that we highlight some of those issues. And so I'm really excited today to be here with Miranda Harris, who is a social worker here in Houston. She's an amazing Black woman who has done a lot of great work in our community and especially within the realm of social justice. So she's here to talk to us and give us her input and insight and tell us things that we should know as we are seeking to ally ourselves and work hand in hand in ensuring racial and social justice for everybody. So Miranda graduated from the University of Houston with her master's in social work in 2016. She has worked while at University of Houston, she planned a series on racial justice called The Legacy Racial Justice Solutions. She currently works as a director of programming for Melanin Minds Matter and is a freelance social work, community activist, and child advocate. So Miranda, I'm so excited to be talking to you today. Thank you so much. Why don't you go ahead and tell us a little bit more about you and the work that you've done in racial justice?
All right. Thank you so much, Catherine. I really appreciate you taking the time to highlight so many of these important issues. And Second Cup for allowing the opportunity to, actually be a sponsor in wanting to advocate and be a ally for racial justice. So I just want to thank you guys for that opportunity to have this conversation. As you said before, when I was a graduate student at the University of Houston, in July 6th of 2016, we actually had two instances back-to-back with Philando Castile and Alton Sterling that went nationwide, which were instances where these were two Black men who were actually murdered, as some would look at it, but mostly in the way that it is, they were murdered by these officers. And when it came time to actually have justice for them, it was like so many other instances, there was no justice given. They were given a slap on the wrist. They were given administrative leave. They were, not even fired from, some of them were fired from their forces, but they were able to obtain employment somewhere else. So like many of the other instances that we've seen before, that was something that kind of set fire to me as a social worker to say, and also as a Black woman, how can we stop this in my community? How can we advocate for the same justice that we would want for anybody to happen in our community and not be overlooked? So I went to the dean, and he was so kind, Dean Datliff, Alan Datliff, who is still the dean there today of the Graduate College of Social Work at University of Houston. And they have continued this series of social justice and racial justice solutions, which is a conversation, a constant conversation, and how it intersects with all the different entities of government and just our everyday infrastructure of how do we tackle these issues. So he allowed me to do that, and it was the first time that it had ever been led by a student. And it actually is a legacy program that they're continuing to do to help the students actually gain their voice and talk about the things that are important to them, especially being social workers and having to go out and be in this world and advocate for those who don't have a voice.
Yeah, that's amazing. So we are going to be sharing this conversation actually on June 19th, which many of us know is referred to as Juneteenth. So I was wondering if you could tell us some of the history of that, what it means to you, and what it should mean for those of us who are interested in doing social justice work.
So Juneteenth is so relevant in today, specifically where we live here in Texas, because in Texas back in 1865, that was when African Americans realized that they, and I use the word realized because that really is what it was. It was brought to their attention and realized that they were no longer enslaved as slaves. They were not the property of someone else because they had already been emancipated 2.5 years before then. And so why it's so relevant for me and probably many other people beyond Texas and should be recognized as a national holiday is because for us to be in 2020 and to have still issues and people advocating for Black Lives to Matter, it just goes to show how a system of being enslaved for 200, 300, 400 years tells us that you become brainwashed. You know, even when you are free, you don't even recognize that you're free because the system is still put in place for people of power to enslave you to some degree. So these people have been walking around Texas, these African-American people, all these years, still believing, you know, that they were enslaved and they were the property of someone and they needed to listen to someone who was white and they had you know, that there was a race that was superior to them, they did not really even understand that. So that's why it's so relevant, and it should be, because even today we are standing to still trying to advocate in the courtroom, advocate in foster care, advocate all over the world in different sectors of how we can be created on an equal level, have the same kind of equity in areas of home ownership, jobs, self-employment, business loans, those kind of things. We're still advocating and fighting to be free, and free in a sense where we are equal. So that's why I think, like, companies like Nike, who have just implemented policy to allow that to be counted as a holiday, as a paid holiday, I think that's very important. I mean, we have so many other holidays that are paid that, I frankly could be argued on so many levels as to why it shouldn't be celebrated, but that's something that should be celebrated and should be celebrated on a national level.
Yeah, thank you so much for speaking to that and so honestly as well. So I've seen, and I'll be honest, since this is an audio conversation, I'm here speaking as a white woman. And so I cannot ever 100% understand or relate to the experiences that Black people in our country are facing. And so while it's not your responsibility as a Black person to educate us, that responsibility is absolutely on us. I would love to know what your insight is and what recommendations you have and what things you'd like to see from the people who are taking that step of responsibility to learn about what we need to be doing as allies with the Black people in our country. Do you mind speaking to that?
Absolutely. I think you used a word that is so simple but yet so important is taking the responsibility, you know, being responsible enough to want to know. That's where it all starts. It starts from being able to recognize and say, hey, whether you believe it or you don't believe it, if you don't believe that racial injustice is real, or if you don't really see it in that light, it's taking enough responsibility to say, let me find out more about on either way. You know, you have to look at it from a perspective of if you are a part of the debate team, you have to be able to argue both points, right? So the best way to argue both points of whatever the conversation is to be able to be, you know, to know exactly what it is and understand it from an educational level, even if you can't understand it from an experience where you actually experience it. You have to be able to know the history, understand what it is, you know, why we have some of the colloquialisms that we use, and why it's important for us to be able to have our natural hair and not have that be put in policy and structured by someone who doesn't even have that kind of hair texture. You know, one of the policies that I always think of when I think about something being so simple in the workplace, how people having dreadlocks or locks, as we call them, because dreads was always a negative term when you talked about hairstyles. They talked about them and they called them dreadlocks because the word dread means awful. So they said dreadlocks looked bad. You know, that was what white people actually thought about that look, people coming from the Caribbean and the islands who had hair that was matted or tangled to some degree. They made it seem as though it couldn't be nice. It couldn't be something that was appealing to the eye. And that's just the texture of our hair. That is the way it is. And if we choose to wear it that way, I don't see why that would be something that you would need to have a policy about. So some of the biggest things I think I can suggest for others to take responsibility and understanding how racial justice can be achieved is, one, wanting and having a genuine desire to really understand and learn and research the issues that involve people of color, simply because we don't live in this world alone. We live amongst many. That's the great part of being of America, is that there is a diverse culture within our country. But being able to truly be diverse in how we live is probably going to be more important. So for me, actually taking a genuine desire to research, understand, and learn, because we all live here. And then two, support Black-owned businesses without the intent to gain something. You see a lot of companies now who are speaking out, which is always a good thing, but do it in a way where you're not trying to gain from it. You know, a lot of companies are trying to maintain their business, keep people of color buying their products, and not just shift to supporting Black-owned businesses. Let those companies like Netflix just donated tons of money to Black universities and colleges. And I think that's important that you provide sponsorship and advocate, you know, create partnership and marketing opportunities for small Black-owned businesses to be able to build and grow where you're not just gaining something from it. And then donate, of course. You know, there's always that gap of in the financial aspect. So it's important that you donate money to help those small Black-owned businesses. And then finally, probably in terms of just being able to immerse yourself in the culture, and that way you're not as afraid of it. So attend events like the Essence Festival in New Orleans. Those are places where you see huge opportunities for Black-owned businesses, sponsorship, the Black culture, how it's celebrated and acknowledged and honored. And that would be something that you could come. I mean, people would actually be able to take the opportunity to see how we feel every day in corporate America being the minority, and how people are looking to see how you are engaging and in interacting with us, and try your best to not feel so uncomfortable and be judged. Enjoy, so, you know, don't just feel like everything has to be about a fight. We have fun too. So, you know, immerse yourself in the culture. And I think that would be, those would be all great ways to just start opening and keeping the conversation going. So,
yeah. And one thing that I heard you say that I want to highlight is you mentioned that there are some people who may not recognize or necessarily believe that racial inequity or injustice is even a thing, which is, I think, important for anyone to recognize for themselves. But the biggest takeaway that I'm hearing from you and your experience is, even if that's the case, even if you're feeling uncomfortable or uncertain, the most important thing that we can be doing is just listening, and listening with an intention to try to understand, not to respond or debate you.
Correct. And kind of in terms of what I talked about in supporting the Black businesses and partnerships, creating those opportunities of equality and equity for Black people. That's what I mean by partnership. So, you know, when you think about equity, you think about how, in order for you to make something equal, everybody has to be standing in the same in the same place, have the same tools, have those things. But even when you give a person the same amount of tools, if the gap is big enough, then, or the same type of tools, it doesn't create an equitable situation. An equitable situation allows for that company or that business or that person to be able to meet exactly where you are in the whole scheme of it. If it's business, if it's healthcare, if it's mental health, it's having the same, not only tools, but also pushing you up into a place where you're all at the same level now. You know, you all can see from the same place. And because we know that history has shown, which we're talking about Juneteenth, that we didn't start that way. So it's going to take more effort, more energy, more tools, more money to get people of color back to an equitable situation.
Yes. Thank you so much for breaking down that difference between equity and equality, because I think so many people are approaching this with the sense of we all should be given the same thing, but that's making the assumption that we're all starting from the same place.
Correct.
And like you've shown, that's just not the case here. And so one thing I want to also acknowledge is a lot of people might be wondering why we're having this conversation, besides the fact that so many people are having these conversations right now anyway, but specifically because for us as an organization, a Second Cup, we work in human trafficking. And so I want to kind of give some context as to why we're doing this, because so often we see the issue of human trafficking visualized more as like a crime of opportunity, where maybe there's a person with a van and they're stalking women or children. But unfortunately, the issue is much more complex than that. And for those who work in the human trafficking field, we have to recognize and we have to affirm that there is a whole bunch of issues that contribute to and intersect with trafficking, including racial justice. So could you just speak a little bit to your understanding of the intersection between race and trafficking?
Absolutely. So human trafficking is just what you said. It's so much more than just the man in the van. When you look at those who are most vulnerable, you see people of color attached to the entities that hold the gap. And those gaps fall in foster care, homelessness, mental health, immigration. They all have gaps in their policies that don't protect the victims. And being a person of color is not a coincidence in those circumstances for me. It is built, it's a built-in factor in how that policy is actually enforced. So when you look across the board and you see those policies that are supposed to be there as protecting factors, there are gaps that allow them to really be targeted in those circumstances. And again, if you look at the numbers, probably at the top, and I don't have them here, that would be something to research, but of the research that I've looked over, you do see minorities falling in that, and most minorities are people of color. So I think that is a huge thing that needs to be addressed from the top, versus from the bottom, you know, to actually work on those things and how you get more policies in place that are addressing the needs of people of color.
Yeah. And one thing that I will say is some of my own research, human trafficking statistics are so hard to come by just by the nature of the issue. Not everyone is counted or is collecting that kind of information, but I have seen numbers that indicate that potentially as many as 70% of victims and survivors of trafficking are people of color. And so you're absolutely right. This is a huge, huge intersection here. And one of the things that we also acknowledge is that human traffickers, they thrive on exploiting these vulnerabilities that we're talking about. And so when we continue to perpetuate or live with these systems and practices that are unbalanced and inequitable, we're actually contributing to that, whether we mean to or not. And so for us as an organization, we think it's so important to be having these conversations about race, so that we can also care about human trafficking and all of the other things that intersect. So Miranda, you have shared some really wonderful things, and I'm so thankful for your input and your experience. Is there anything else that you'd like to speak to, or any organizations that you'd like to point us to further our learning?
Well, as I mentioned earlier, I am the director of programming for an organization called Melanin Minds Matter, and that organization works in the HISD school district with young ladies from the age groups of elementary school all the way to high school. They go in, and we have a curriculum that we talk to them about self-esteem and talk about how their feelings are impacted living in a world where it appears that people of color and Black lives don't matter, and how that impacts the things that they feel comfortable actually being able, like goals and dreams that they have to achieve. All of those things is what we address in that. So that organization is very near and dear to my heart. So that's one, if you want to donate to them, you can. And just as an example of how important it is to support Black-owned businesses, the programming company that actually created our website that allowed you to make donations was a small Black-owned business, and because of COVID, unfortunately, they have had to close their doors. So the way that you can donate is through Cash App, and it is $MelaninMindsMatter, and that's Melanin, M-E-L-A-N-I-N, Minds, M-I-N-D-S, Matter, M-A-T-T-E-R. So please donate to them, and if that's not somewhere that you want to donate, then find a Black-owned business and actually donate to them two or three throughout the year just to show your support. And I also want to thank Second Cup for having these conversations, to continue these conversations and be a part of the solution. I really appreciate that you guys are taking something that's near and dear to your heart, which is human trafficking, and pulling out the component of race and dissecting that to find out how you can actually create solutions to these issues. So thank you guys again so much for having me to be a part of this conversation with you.
Well, no, Miranda, thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us and share your experience. We appreciate you so much. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.